Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Doviak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Doviak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money. We've got some great topics today. We're going to look at a new tone by the Federal Reserve that caught everybody, including me, off guard. We're going to look at the new fiduciary rule and how consumer groups are saying it will not hurt small investors. In the Plan Your Prosperity segment, I'm going to talk about how the Grinch learned good money skills and tell you a little bit of the story behind how the Grinch stole Christmas. And then finally, I'm going to answer the question, what's a Santa Claus rally? So let's get started with the data from last week, which was the week ending December 15th, 2023. I'm taping this on the 18th. And I can't believe it's exactly 1 week until Christmas. It seems like somehow I went from running early to running late. So happy holidays if you celebrated Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Merry Christmas. I've just been wishing people happy anything you celebrate. There may not be live shows for the next 2 weeks just because of how the date works and the fact that I submit my shows for production on Monday, which is going to be Christmas Day and New Year's Day this year. So perhaps there'll be a couple of repeats. I don't think you guys will probably miss it. And then I'll do a big end of year recap and outlook for 2023, the first new show that I do in January. But last week, the market was really happy with what the Fed said. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit. The Dow was up almost 3%, and the S&P 500 was up 2.5%. The NASDAQ was up 2.85%, and even gold got in on the act. It's 1.93% up. Oil was down about 0.5%, the current price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude at the front month price is $71.43. The 10-year Treasury yield was down a little over 0.30%, and the current rate is 3.917%, and the dollar's down about 1.5%. Bitcoin closed up last week about 0.1%. Its current price is $41,900. So what made the market go up almost 3% and the 10-year Treasury go down over 3%? What the Fed said. No one expected Jerome Powell to be talking about lowering rates and mentioning a real possibility that in 2024, he's going to lower rates. What I hate about what he did was he's already taken some of the punch out of the action so that the minute the market gets a sense of anything, it reacts. And it's much quicker to react on rumor long before the news really hits. That's why in trading, there's an old saying, buy the rumor, sell the news, because it's gone up as much as it's going to before it actually happens. I really, really did not expect Jerome Powell to say that this last week. In fact, if you listen to the show, you know I didn't, because I've said I think he's probably pretty happy with where interest rates are, and he wants to be able to keep some powder dry in case something happens and he needs to lower rates. And the problem is the real rates have actually lowered before he got a chance to do it. So in effect, he's already shot some of that gun when there was no reason to shoot it, because the market's doing fine, the employment numbers are doing fine, the economic data is doing fine, some of the prices are beginning to come down, and people, although they say the overall economy is bad, they say their personal economy is actually doing quite well. So that disconnect's going to catch up with itself. You know, if everybody thinks they're doing better, then obviously the economy as a whole is doing better, even though that's not how people are reporting it. So I'm kind of disappointed in him, if I have to be perfectly honest. Not that Jay Powell cares in any regard what I think, but I think he took an action he didn't need to take. And I think that he has gotten rid of some of the umph that we paid a really big price for him to get in the first place, because that was why the markets went down so much last year. So, you know, yes, it's good for the end of the year. Maybe he was going to do it. I just wish he hadn't said it. The other thing now is the people who will find something negative in everything are saying that it's much harder on the fixed income side to get a decent return. Remember, we dropped 30%, and now the 10-year treasury yield is under 4 at 3.917. And it's true. It's hard if you're a yield investor, a bond investor, when rates go down. Now, your fund goes up, but this was just still my opinion, done too quickly. But if you're a borrower of money, this is really good news for you. And that's why the market was so happy with it, is it's much easier to have economic expansion in a lower interest rate environment. So if you're wanting to buy a house, you're wanting to buy a car, or you've got credit card debt that you can't get paid off, there's a real good chance rates will be coming down a little bit just simply off of the Fed news. So we'll keep up with it. I mean, the market was very, very happy last week with everything that went on. No doubt if you're trying to buy a house, you're happy about this as well. If you own bonds in your portfolio, you're certainly not hurt. You're just not going to make as much yield. And we'll just have to wait and see how this plays out and see what the actual next move of the Federal Reserve really is.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And last week was the public hearing for the Department of Labor's new fiduciary rule, and 45 different organizations came and spoke. For the most part, the broker-dealer community and the insurance community are opposed to the fiduciary standard, where consumer groups like the Consumer Federation of America are in favor of it. And the Consumer Federation of America addressed a concern that the BD and insurance community continue to raise, which is if you make everyone act as a fiduciary, small investors are going to have a harder time getting care. And I'm not sure how small they're defining small. I really think for a lot of people, especially in the middle of the United States, these could be relatively good-sized portfolios they're talking about. The problem with it is their concern in the eyes of the consumer groups, and in my opinion only, it's just not true. It's possible to get good service. It's possible to have small clients served under a fiduciary standard. They're saying that really there's no reason to believe, there's been no proof that it happens. It's still the biggest argument that the non-fiduciary group is raising. This happened back when President Obama proposed a fiduciary rule. And all of the language that came out said that, oh, the small investor is going to be hurt. There were all kinds of hearings on that rule, and it was really disturbing for me to hear companies that I liked say, oh, no, we don't think we should have to act in a client's best interest as defined by a legal standard. And I just do not understand the argument. I know why, but the argument isn't sound. They just have to say something to sound good. If you have someone who is a small client, and if you are needing to make adequate income from that client in order to be able to serve them, there's many billing options that are available. They're just not commensurate with the commission model. Now, mind you, I did not say that I was opposed to commission. I know that the BD world functions in a commission basis, but I know people who take commission who are fully happy to embrace the fiduciary standard. Where the BD community tends to get into trouble with this is the fact that they can make a market in a security, so they're paid to promote the security, whether it's in the client's best interest or not. That's really where this monster is coming from. It's not on the consumer side at all. It's on the making a market side. They're arguing that consumers won't be able to get service because they want the whole thing to go away. You can pay a financial professional through check, through assets under management, hourly rate, flat rate. And I know there's some regulatory issues around this, but I also know a lot of advisors working with smaller clients who work on a subscription basis. So what you need to do when you're working with a financial person is find out how they're being paid. Realize if you're a small investor, most companies aren't not-for-profits. So there's got to be a way for them to make enough money to make it work. If you have $2,000 in an investment account, you know, that advisor is charging 1%, they're going to make 20 whole dollars a year off your account. So maybe they charge by the hour in addition to that for financial planning work. You know, I'd make the argument that if all you're doing is placing a trade and never doing anything else until the client calls you and wants another trade placed, $20 isn't that bad of a deal. I know it's not a lot, but you could do it. But if you want to make a profit margin, then you can always charge an hourly fee for the planning and a fee for assets under management, and just don't ever double bill the client. So it's possible to get paid and be a fiduciary and work with small clients. It just doesn't fit the model that these business functions are working under, and as a result, they're claiming that they can't do it. We'll have to wait and see. I don't know how this will go. I hope it goes well. You know, it tends to come and then go away. I really believe the way that we pass a mandatory fiduciary standard is for the consumers to demand it. So we'll just have to wait and see how all of this plays out. And I will keep you up to date with what's going on. Probably it'll be quiet for a couple of weeks at the holidays. Everything tends to stop. And now that they've had their open hearing, they're probably going to go back, take all of the comments, and then go from there. So I'll keep you in the loop. But in the meantime, ask your advisor how they're compensated. Ask them if they're willing to uphold a fiduciary standard. Those are important things for you to do as a consumer.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And today's episode started with a good housekeeping quiz, which was online on Facebook, and it said, see what Christmas movie came out the year you were born. I like Christmas movies, so I was reviewing, and when I got to 1966, the year I was born, I found out that How the Grinch Stole Christmas came out that year. Right around the same time as Charlie Brown Christmas and all of those animated shows that we're so used to now, they all came out right about the time I was born. And I didn't realize that How the Grinch Stole Christmas and I were the same age. So then when I was trying to come up with some festive sorts of financial things to talk about in this week's show, I thought a little bit more about the Grinch, and I thought about some of the words from it, and I got curious about where the television show came from, because I had never seen a How the Grinch Stole Christmas book. So I Googled it, like everybody does, and I found out that the Grinch was first in an illustrated poem by Dr. Seuss that was called The Hubbub and the Grinch. And that actually came out in 1955. Then a couple of years after that, Dr. Seuss started actually writing How the Grinch Stole Christmas. He came out shortly after The Cat in the Hat. So really, How the Grinch Stole Christmas was one of his earlier books. It's just not a book I had ever seen. He said that he was inspired to write it because he was worried about Christmas that year, and his wife was sick, And he was really tired of how commercialized Christmas had become. And it said that he felt really Grinch-ish. And so that was the story behind how he wrote How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Because the Grinch hates Christmas too. But where it gets really interesting are some of the lines out of it. And I've got quotes for everything, and I've got sources for everything. I will say reviewing a television show is more difficult than just putting a citation for an article. But if you're trying to run this down, if you'll look up How the Grinch Stole Christmas, you'll be able to find most of it. So what the Grinch says is, and the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in the snow, stood puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. And he puzzled and puzzled till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. What if Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store? What if Christmas perhaps means a little bit more? And if you're a Grinch fan, you know that he can't believe that everybody's still singing after he's stolen their Christmas. And this is when he realizes that Christmas or holidays or festivities are more than the things that we buy for people. And if you want to talk about a wonderful financial planning lesson in a great kids' Christmas cartoon, and personally, I'm also a big fan of the Jim Carrey movie adaptation of it, then realizing that Christmas is more than what you buy can make things a little bit easier to deal with. You know, I talk about how prosperity is more than being rich. You can be prosperous and not be rich. You do need adequate finances. And that's why financial planning is so critical to actual good financial health. Because if you don't plan, either with the help of a planner or on your own, you're not going to have enough money. And when people say, oh, it's not about the money, I at least am not talking about not having enough money to buy groceries or not having enough money to pay the rent. When you don't have money on that level, then this is so unbelievably difficult. And I would encourage you to use any resources available to you so that you can get the food that you need, get the housing that you need. There's no shame in it, and you need to get back on your feet. I'm talking about feeling that Christmas isn't Christmas, or Hanukkah isn't Hanukkah, or any of the December holidays, okay? No judgment here, but they're all a function of how much you spend on people. And I think that's so unhealthy. And it puts people under condemnation because they feel like if they can't give their kids a big Christmas, then they're not doing a good job. That's not true. You know, sometimes it's all you can do to pay the rent. So here's some ideas that if money's tight or you just don't want to make it all about the money, some ideas that you can do. Invite someone who's going to be alone for the holidays. I just discovered my aunt has a neighbor who's going to be alone, and we're going to have her come over for some of Christmas because nobody should spend Christmas absolutely by themselves. If you don't want to help someone in need, if you can't go serve Christmas dinner, then consider a charitable donation to those organizations that are able to reach out and help people in need. Help someone who's grieving. You know, the holidays can be really, really tough when there's an empty seat at the table, when there's someone who was there last year who isn't there this year. And people don't know how to address it. The people who haven't lost the person don't know how to address it. And actually, the person who's lost the person also doesn't know how to address it. There's a lot of lack of communication around grief. So if you are the person who's looking at someone you care about who's lost someone, my advice is continue to invite them, even if they say no once in a while. Try to treat them as normally as you can. and treat the person they lost like they're a regular person. If you're the person who suffered the loss, I made the decision when I suffered a great loss to say yes to every invitation and then sort it out later. I know sometimes you don't want to go and you don't want to do, but you really will feel better if you go and do, especially if it's around people you trust. So take care of the grieving this Christmas as well. If you have family holiday traditions, dust them off, even if you haven't done them since you were a child. Your kids will love it. And even if you have teenagers, even if there's a little eye rolling, trust me, they'll do it with their kids 25 years from now. Then also, if you don't have any family traditions, make some family traditions. So if you guys have never really done anything as a family around the holidays, you know, go look at lights or go watch a movie, make popcorn, make pizza. You can do all kinds of things that'll be new traditions. You know, if you're a little bit more creative, maybe you bake some cookies. Maybe you have a family game night and you make homemade hot chocolate with hot chocolate bombs, because that's a really fun thing to do. So just make sure that you do things that don't always cost a lot of money. I'm not telling you not to go rent the inner tube and go down the slud, but I am saying that nobody can afford to do stuff like that every night during the Christmas season. And it's really easy to feel like you need to be doing something fun all the time right now. So do something fun. Just find some things to intersperse with the other activities that don't cost a lot of money, and to remind you that Christmas isn't about those things that come from a store, that Christmas is a little bit more. It's the people that we care about. It's the pets that we care about. It's the faith that we celebrate. Christmas is a lot of things other than what you buy at the mall.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. If you'd like to submit a question to the show, you need to go to my website, which is askpeggy.com, and you'll find a link where you can submit a question to the show. I'll answer it and help you get some information that can help you make good financial decisions. Remember, I don't tell you what you ought to buy and sell. I'm not ever going to come on this radio show and say, hey, I think you should go buy XYZ stock because I think it's about to go up. What I will help you do is figure out how to analyze the data that you've got so that you can make good decisions. I'll try to help you understand the sorts of things that help an economic environment, that are barriers to an economic environment. So I can't tell you whether you should buy it because that does become investment advice. I don't know you. I don't know if this is the right thing in your portfolio or not. That's why it's really important to work with someone you trust if you don't want to make the decisions yourself. That's why I continue to talk about the fiduciary standard again today, like I did in the second segment, because this is very hard. It can be pretty scary when it's the money that you need to retire on, and it's very important that you get individualized, customized advice from somebody who knows you and knows all of your situations. Now, if you're still looking for that last-minute stocking stuffer, I just can't really let this go without reminding you that you can order both my first and second book off of Amazon or your favorite independent bookstore. The new one that came out this year is 52 Weeks to Well-Being, What a Woman Needs to Know to Become Queen of Her Finances. My first book came out in 2018. There is a new edition coming out next year, but that book is 52 Weeks to Prosperity. They're both by me. You can look it up under Peggy Doviak, D-O-V-I-A-K. It's on Amazon. It's on indie bookstores. Barnes & Noble can order it. Why am I suggesting, if you were interested in the book, that you buy it now? Because it's a great gift, and it's specifically designed to be completed in a year. That's why there's 52 chapters. The 52 chapters help you deal with one issue a week. Each of the chapters is super short, and I use examples and I give you activities you can do. But it's a great book to start the first week of January, especially because we're all a little more enthusiastic about making good financial decisions in January. So if you're looking for something, give it a shot. I want to talk today about something that you may have heard about if you are interested in finance, if you follow the business channel. That's called a Santa Claus rally. And I always tend to think that Santa Claus rallies come a little earlier than they do, but in fact, a Santa Claus rally begins on the trading day right after Christmas. So it's the last five trading days of December and the first two trading days of January. So, you know, you'll have weekends and holidays and things that will interfere with that, but it's seven trading days, and it's the last five of the year and the first 2 days of the next year. Often, this is a period of time when people are in a good mood. Often, there's not a lot of data coming out. So what'll happen when you don't have data, you don't have a lot of trading, and everybody's in a good mood, is you'll tend to get sometimes abnormally optimistic returns. Now, I am not saying the market is going up. Do not take that from this. But what I know is true is thin trading. So lots of people are off. Lots of people aren't trading. Thin trading always causes more extreme market reactions because a little bit of news impacts the market a lot harder. Now, if you couple that with the fact that folks are generally in a really good mood around the holidays, then that optimism bleeds out a little bit further than sometimes it should. So that can lead to the concept of a rally. Because remember, what we're actually defining here is a Santa Claus rally. Why does the market tend to go up? Lots of things can throw this idea off course. Like, I have to wonder, I was figuring we'd have a Santa Claus rally, but again, Jerome Powell made a statement last week nobody thought he was going to make. And because of that, the markets did a big, huge, giant rally last week that was a little earlier than what you would have expected. So now the question is, have we actually already had our Santa Claus rally? And when you read all of the talking heads, you know, you get a million different responses. I'm going to go with the safest one that I know, which is, I don't have any idea. I do know right now the economic data is sound. I do know right now that it looks like the Fed is going to become a little bit more accommodating, which means that rates may start going down much sooner than any of us thought. Those things will tend to cause a market to rise a little bit. But we've had such a big jump, given the unexpectedness of the news, I don't know. What I will tell you is it's something you just watch rather than trying to day trade it. That's my opinion, okay? Again, talk to your financial person, but typically, chasing things like this will get you in trouble because, like, right now, we don't know because we've already had the big rally if we really get the Santa Claus rally or not. But it's going to be interesting, and I don't see things on the horizon that make me really pessimistic about next year. We're going to have to watch. We're going to have to wait. Politics will be weird, and we'll just have to see how everything that happens impacts the market movements. Happy holidays.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.